Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Four in-person witnesses will testify today before the House committee investigating the January 6 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol as the panel pursues its case against former President Donald Trump for his role in the riot. Republican supporters of the former president have called the exercise one of political posturing. Even many opponents of Trump wonder what the ultimate outcome could be. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Joining us today, Jesse Balmert, state government reporter with the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. Welcome back, Jesse.
Thanks for having me.
And Julie Carr-Smyth, State House correspondent for the Associated Press. Welcome back.
Good morning, Ann.
And Joe Engels of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Welcome back, Joe.
Thanks for having me.
So instead of kicking off with our usual what's happening with the redistricting conversation, I am interested in what your takes are on the hearings in Washington and, you know, what the political calculations or equations are here in Ohio. Julie Carr-Smyth?
Well, there is a strong group of Republicans in Ohio, obviously, who are Trump supporters who believe that the election was stolen, which it wasn't, and that's what the hearings are about. We are not alone in the state of Ohio. Donald Trump's statements on this have persuaded vast swaths of the American electorate. So we have one of his chief defenders, Jim Jordan, is a congressman from Ohio, and he is standing with other Republicans in calling this a witch hunt and saying that none of this is true and that they just are disappointed in Donald Trump's success and don't want him to run again. And what I have noticed is 20 million Americans watched that hearing on last Thursday. That was more than watched the NBA.
That was a lot.
That's a
lot
of people.
I was surprised.
Yes. And so I think that, you know, the middle ground in Ohio, which is more Republican now than it had been. It used to be a bellwether, but still that middle independent swing voter is watching this with great interest. So I think that the idea is to settle this before the election if they can, and maybe the Justice Department will bring some charges.
What do you think, Jesse Balmert?
Yeah, it's interesting to see Jim Jordan's role in this. He was subpoenaed to testify before this committee and has said that he, you know, doesn't want to. I think he sent out a letter last week that says, like, respectfully, I do not answer to you or other members of the select committee. I'm accountable to the voters of Ohio's 4th Congressional District. And so, of course, those voters will decide whether he is reelected. Don't believe he has a primary, but feel free to fact check me on that. And then that district, because of redistricting, just to bring everything back to redistricting, is still going to be pretty safe for him as a Republican. And so this idea that the voters will decide whether Jim Jordan's behavior in this was acceptable or unacceptable, it's maybe not even going to be like a particularly fair fight in November on that one.
Right. Even he's in a protected district thanks to gerrymandering and the redistricting as it stands at this point. Congressional redistricting is going to be has already gone forth, at least for this election cycle. Joe Engels, so he's in a safe district, but there probably are a lot of locals, at least at the state level, wondering who the Republican lawmakers are that sought pardons in advance from President Trump. That's supposed to be coming out.
Yeah, there's some reporters wondering that too. I'd love to know that too. I think, that this whole hearing, the first thing we saw, all the new video in there, it was really compelling to watch it. And, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm jaded, maybe you guys disagree here, but I'm not sure that this has changed any minds of anyone watching it. But the thing is that it's putting it out there in front, and people are talking about it. Now, whether it becomes an issue, whether anyone's charged, if it's an election, you know, kind of issue, that remains to be seen. But I do think that by putting it out there and having people watch it, people are getting a sense that, hey, this was a problem. It wasn't friendly tourist at the Capitol.
Hmm. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It is our weekly reporter roundtable. You just heard from Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Also with us, Jesse Ballmer of the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau, and Julie Carr Smythe, Statehouse correspondent for the Associated Press. We're talking about kind of the political calculus here when it comes to the hearings in Washington, the January 6th hearings that continue today, starting at 10:30. We'll be covering that when they air. We will be covering that on 89.7 NPR News, so stand by for that. You know, I probably the oldest person here, and I was grounded the summer of the Watergate trials, so, Watergate hearings, so I actually listened to them. And I can't remember, and I could kick myself for not looking this up, whether or not Republicans were responding at the outset the same way they are now. So at the outset of those hearings, defending Richard Nixon, I know through the hearings, Republicans started to turn against him, and that's what forced him to eventually resign. Right, Julie?
Well, I don't recall that either. I don't want to be fact-checked on that myself. But I will say that everyone should keep in mind with these hearings that this is a crucial midterm election. And there's a strong chance the Congress, which is very narrowly divided, is going to the Democrats are going to lose their majority in the fall. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big part of the entire impetus for just
timing of it.
Timing.
Yeah.
Right. Just to make sure that they have aired this while Democrats have the majority. We've heard a lot of Republicans under their breaths or in off the record comments aren't supporting this, but they're saying they need to support it with their electorate. And we'll see how polling goes after this and whether they feel they still need to do that.
What do you think?
Yeah, another thing I found interesting is there's been just like this question throughout of, you know, whether there was enough voter fraud to affect the results of the 2020 election, which, you know, the Associated Press did a very nice review and found that that was not the case. And election officials really across the nation have said, like, if there was voter fraud, it was minor. But the testimony last week from, you know, even Ivanka Trump and some of the higher ups saying, you know, they believed the Justice Department and Attorney General Barr that there was not enough voter fraud sufficient to affect the 2020 election. You know, like Joe Biden was the president elect. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting whether that is enough to convince people who've kind of believed that there was some sort of miscarriage of justice here, even including Republicans running in Ohio in November.
Joe Ingles, do you think it's sustainable, that 20 million that they attracted on Thursday night? Of course, the timing's much different. You know, 10:30 or whatever it is, they're doing it during the day. It's going to be different, right?
Right. It's going to be different during the day. A lot of people work during the day. And I think there was a lot of curiosity with last Thursday wanting to, you know, kind of see what they had. But, you know, we live in the age of DVR. So, you know, people may be you know, DVRing it to watch it later, or, you know, this is all going online. And as we know, you know, people stream later if they want to see something. So it's not like the final viewership is that 20 million or whatever comes out of today.
It's not like during the Watergate hearings, Ann. There are a lot of ways to watch it later.
That's true. I mean, think about that. There was no, you either watched it during the day, like people like me who were grounded at the time, or you didn't. You heard about it on the nightly news.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and to that point, nearly every media organization, all the national publications, you know, NPR is going to be providing this and probably, you know, reporting on it after the fact and what were the key moments. And so I think it'll be accessible to the American public if they choose to engage with it.
One of the things that Trump has said is that, and his supporters are saying, this is a rehash, everybody knows it, old news. But, you know, they really have held back some of the things, some of the depositions they did and some of the evidence.
We got a little bit of taste of that on Thursday.
Right. And I heard the chair say there will later be a direct connect between the Trump folks and the Proud Boys, which would be brand new if that is the case.
As far as how are prominent Ohio Republicans spinning this right now?
Very delicately.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to
think.
Are
they staying quiet? I mean, my sense is they're not saying much at all.
I think they're not saying much at all. I don't know if anyone's even asked Governor Mike DeWine about it recently. But I know around the time the transition was happening, Mike DeWine was saying, you know, we should get this transition moving. Joe Biden is the president-elect. And that even probably prompted a tweet from Donald Trump that got a lot of attention saying, you know, the primary in Ohio will be interesting. And that got a lot of ink all the way through Mike DeWine's eventual primary win in May. Mm-hmm. So I think his position has pretty consistently been like there needed to be a transition here. There was a lot of statements right after January 6th saying this is, you know, from members of Congress, from Republicans saying this is horrific or problematic or, you know, not what America stands for. And just that fervor of those statements has diminished over the months.
And I mean, probably the person that's most careful about it has to be Secretary of State Frank LaRose, because he is, you know, he's the elections chief. He needs to defend our election, which, of course, Trump won by 8+ percentage mm-hmm. points. And so he has said there is not substantial fraud. There's not even 0.0001% of fraud getting referred to prosecutors. You know, he's probably just trying to, you know, win his reelection.
Right. But I thought Frank LaRose was kind of muddying the waters lately.
Right. I mean, he did in his primary. He started to sort of say Donald Trump is, he tweeted that Donald Trump is right when he talks about fraud, but then tries to say not here, not in Ohio. And so I think that that's a, we're hearing a lot from Ohio Republicans is sort of, we have a great system.
Everyone but thee and me, right?
Right. And, yeah. And we actually have a case up in Lorain County where some of the folks who were trying to do an insider job got into a courthouse on an election night and tried to get into the computers. These were people who were trying to prove how easy it was to get into an election system. They failed. Mm-hmm. But the point being, like, we are targets.
Joe Ingles?
Yeah, one thing that I've noticed, especially with a lot of Republicans, key Republicans during this hearing, is when the hearing gets brought up, the subject gets changed to inflation, gas prices, something like that. That seems to be the popular topic. And, it, you know, that always seems to be the way that anything that is not necessarily going your way politically, that seems to be the mode of operation these days, is change the subject to something that you do feel more popular on. And so I think as this goes on, we can just, you know, kind of gauge it from watching that as well.
What they don't talk about.
What they don't talk about. It's, it, you know, what sometimes what you don't say is more important than what you do say.
Let's try to squeeze in a little bit of state news here before we turn to the January 6th House committee hearing that gets underway at 10:30 now. We will be carrying it completely on 89.7 NPR News, so stand by for that. I wanted to talk about House Republicans. They passed a bill to block transgender girls from playing on female sports teams in K-12 and college in Ohio. One of the big questions has been about how to verify a minor's gender at birth, and this is a question of intrusiveness. What are they talking about, Joe Ingles?
Well, you know, this is a national talking point among conservative groups. This has been brought up in other states. We've seen it pass in other states. Here in Ohio, we know at the high school level, there is only one transgender female who is playing on a high school team. I'm not sure that we've seen the number in college yet. But the thing is that it really isn't like there's widespread numbers of transgender women playing on teams. So
I think there's only 5 in Ohio, according to the Ohio High School Athletic Association.
Right. And the majority of those are in the middle school level.
Okay.
So the Ohio High School Athletic Association has had a protocol in place for this. And it, you know, it involves hormones and therapy and monitoring that. It involves blood screening, muscle screening, that kind of thing. And so there is a process. And the one high school transgender female who is playing is has been cleared. She, you know, she's gone through all that. She's been cleared. So it's kind of a an issue that at least at the high school level has already been spoken to, and at the NCAA level, they also have some protocols in place. So I think a lot of people are wondering, why are you doing this?
So does anybody have the answer to that burning question?
So the I mean, Joe really summarized the like kind of solution and one of a problem aspect. The other aspect that people have focused on is the language that would be used to verify sex is potentially pretty invasive. There are three different options, and one includes an internal and external exam, which could be like a genital check. And the fear is that if a girl looks too masculine or is performing too like at too high of a level, you know, a parent complains or the school complains or a coach complains, would that student then be subject to all of these testings whether or not she is transgender? And this type of language has been included in bills across the nation. It really looks like draft legislation, but I don't think anyone's really picked up on like the potential adverse effects of it until Ohio. And there's just been a lot of attention to that particular language as well.
The debate folds into this whole parents' rights type movement that we're seeing from the right across the country, and folks who are saying, you know, schools are too woke and that they're imposing certain very liberal values on students, including acceptance of LGBTQ community members and teaching race relations and the racist history of this country. So it's part of this whole talking points that they're ginning up, sort of a concern among parents to that, you know, these things are happening that you should be scared of. And, you know, as you say, on the flip side, you've got one or two, a handful of people statewide where this even applies.
So we're talking about transgender females bringing a quote-unquote unfair advantage to a boys or men's team athletic. But, I mean, hypothetically, I mean, just wondering in the reverse, you know, or the other side of the coin, is transgender boys is there an equal, you know, I guess 14th Amendment issue here, equal, you know, under the law sort of a thing, and wondering if that's going to become an issue or has it anywhere in the country?
So this bill only affects transgender girls playing on girls or women's teams. And there is an element of like, we must protect the girls aspect of the language that you are hearing. I think the bill is even labeled something like the Save Women's Sports Act.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of the language that you heard on the floor was like, we must protect these women.
Okay.
And it's a combination of that people who were born male might compete at a different level, and also then this
hypothetically, but I mean hypothetically it could be
right.
The opposite, you know.
Yeah, and it is interesting. You make a great point about you know, there's never been really a threat that girls playing on boys' teams were a threat.
Given an unfair advantage.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, the genital inspection thing comes at this time that we've had these amazing, horrible cases of, you know, Richard Strauss and
Larry Nassar at Michigan State.
Right. Yeah. And just like that you have, and I'm sure that that's really scaring a lot of the people who are
watching those cases.
Still on the I guess state lawmakers are also considering a measure. We have about a minute and about a couple minutes maybe, are considering a measure that would require schools to provide age-appropriate instruction on child sexual abuse prevention in grades K through 6 and sexual violence prevention in grades 7 through 12. And the bill would allow, this is the hitch, the bill would allow districts to decide what instruction is provided and allow parents to opt their children out. That has some worried about the effectiveness of the measure. Joe Ingles, why?
I'm not really certain why that's a big concern if you can opt out of it. You know, the schools get to choose how they do this, and you know, different schools may have different ways that they want to explain this to their students. That was the reason that was put in there that way. But yeah, I'm not really sure why there is a problem with it. Maybe Jesse or Julie might know.
Julie?
Well, I mean, it's to allow parents to opt out of teaching young kids about abuse when they may be the perpetrator is
or protecting a perpetrator.
Right. Is really the scariest piece of it. And it goes back to this parents' rights idea that you're teaching our kids too early about sex. You're teaching them, you're exposing them to too much tolerance of LGBTQ folks, you know, here on, you know, the day after Pride weekend, whatever. But, you know, it's a movement that has to do with attacking liberal values in the schools.
And it's worth noting this is a bipartisan piece of legislation. The types of education would be tailored to the age of the children. So, you know, maybe good touch or bad touch for children under sixth grade or something more comprehensive for older students. So I think there's a lot of fear about what this curriculum could be, but that's not the intention.
Okay. And like in 30 seconds or less. We have about a minute left. I'm wondering about what about redistricting? What's going on? I mean, what are you looking for, Julie Carr-Smythe?
Well, I'll pass to Jessie because
okay,
she has a good idea.
So we're still waiting for the congressional map, a decision on whether that's constitutional or not from the Ohio Supreme Court. There's also been a few lawsuits that have been filed looking at whether candidates can get on the ballot if they filed after February 2nd and for the August 2nd primary. And there's both a federal and a state one. So we'll see if that is opened any further.
No matter what, in 2018, did you ever think it would be this big of a mess?
No.
No.
And Joe Ingles is shaking her head. No, I mean, in a million years. Who thought?
Right. I mean, it was a bipartisan ballot campaign that
and now you
was
have
supposed
to seriously
fix it.
Wonder who you're going to get to vote for. And in some districts, you might not get to vote for anybody.
I volunteered to cover this and the gubernatorial primary thinking that one would be over before the other one. And it was not the primary.
Well, I want to thank all of you for joining us today. Julie Carr-Smythe, State House correspondent for the Associated Press.
Thanks for having me.
And Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks, Joe.
Always fun to be here, Ann.
And Jesse Ballmert, state government reporter with the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau.
Happy Monday.
And we are going to join special coverage now. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're going to go to special coverage from NPR. The House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol is holding hearings this morning. We now go to that coverage. This is 89.7 NPR News. You've been listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Thanks for joining us today.